I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is March 23rd, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. For those of you at home who are just tuning in, we are starting the committee 15 minutes late because session went long. We will have the full hour and a half for the committee and adjourn at 2:45. Clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Wozlowick.
Wozlowick present.
Heintzeman.
Present.
Acone.
Present.
Ackland.
Ackland present.
Backer.
Backer present.
Becker Finn.
Present.
Eklund.
Present.
Fisher.
Fisher present.
Green.
Present.
Igo.
Igo present.
Jordan.
Present.
Keeler.
Present.
Lee.
Lee present.
Lipper.
Present.
Lewick.
Lewick present.
Morrison.
Morrison present.
Nelson.
Present.
Tice.
Tice present.
Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Friday, March 19th, 2021. Representative Morrison, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrison moves the minutes for March 19th, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Members, the topic today are the governor's budget recommendations for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We have about 20 minutes of presentation with the commissioner and the chief financial officer and assistant commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome, Commissioner Sarah Stroman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Stroman, and I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I do want to express appreciation for the opportunity to be here today to discuss DNR's budget and the governor's budget recommendations for DNR for fiscal years 22 and 23. Mr. Chair, as you noted, with me today are Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer and our Chief Financial Officer, Mary Robison. And our plan is to provide you with an overview of DNR's budget, just to provide a little bit of context for the governor's budget recommendations. And then we'll also review the governor's budget recommendations themselves with a focus on the most significant proposals. And then, of course, we're happy to answer any questions that committee members might have. I'm going to ask Ms. Robinson if she can share our presentation.
We have it.
Perfect. And I think if you can just go ahead to slide 3, Mary. What I want to do is just quickly review a little bit of the DNR's mission, which I know I've recited for you all before, but it is to work with Minnesotans to conserve and manage the state's natural resources and to provide outdoor recreation opportunities and to provide for commercial uses of natural resources in a way that creates a sustainable quality of life. And I wanna start here because as we'll discuss, our budget is really tied to our mission. The budget furthers our mission by maintaining critical service delivery and advancing a new initiative to address climate change. As I think we talked about in our overview, the department is organized and we deliver our programs through 7 divisions and 4 regions. We employ about 3,900 individuals at any one time. That equates to 2,600 full-time equivalents. And we have a presence in every part of the state. So I know every one of you interacts with our staff. Our budget is structured by division. And so today we'll look at the budget with a focus on the many funding sources that each division uses to deliver services to Minnesotans. I do want to note that normally we would have each of our division directors here to meet with you and discuss their division's work and budgetary needs, but we found that's not very effective given the digital virtual format that we're in. So I just, we wanted to include this slide as a way of quick introduction. And I know that many of you have met one or more of our directors and will continue to work with them, I'm sure, throughout the session. And then I also want to introduce or reintroduce our regional directors. These often are the DNR representatives that you as legislators interact with in your districts and communities. And so we encourage you to reach out to our regional leaders with any questions you may have about local issues as well. Mr. Chair, at this point, I'm gonna invite Mary Robison to walk you through budget overview, and then we'll highlight the governor's budget recommendations.
Ms. Robison, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mary Robison, Chief Financial Officer for the DNR. My goal today is just to give you a brief overview of the DNR's overall budget, and then I'm going to pass it to Assistant Commissioner Meyer to go through some of our division-specific budgets. As you can see in this pie chart, the DNR has a number of different dedicated funding sources. This image starts to give you an indication of some of the complexity of our budget, but it really is just the tip of the iceberg. We spend across 50 different funds of the DNR. We have 15 different accounts within the Game and Fish Fund, which is that orange pie piece you see there, as well as 20 different accounts in the Natural Resources Fund, the gray pie piece at the bottom there, with revenue streams as diverse as timber, motorized vehicles, mining rents and royalties, et cetera. So we really do have a really wide variety of activities and funding streams here at the DNR. You'll also notice that the general fund, which is the light blue pie piece on the top right, is about 24% of our total budget. This is the 2021 budget for a total of $1.3 billion. That 24% is a similar percentage to the legacy funds, which you can see represented most notably by the Outdoor Heritage pie piece there, the bright yellow, as well as the Parks and Trails and Clean Water legacy funds constitute a similar percentage, again, to our general fund budget. I'd also want to note one final thing on this slide is that of that general fund budget, about 40% is passed through to outside of the department, either through payments in lieu of taxes or payments to tribal governments in accordance with treaties. So only about 60% of that general fund budget remains with the department to do programmatic work. And we'll talk about that a little bit further in my presentation here as well. So this chart shows DNR expenditure from FY18 to the most recent fiscal year of FY20. And you can see the growth in expenditures over time. You'll see there are two black lines in this chart. The bottom one indicates the general fund direct appropriations over that time period, which you'll see have somewhat declined. And then in recent years, we've been able to build back going into FY19 and 20. The top line constitutes DNR's operating budget. So everything above that is either the general fund open appropriations that I mentioned, either for payment in lieu of taxes or payments to tribal governments or our fire open appropriation, as well as the legacy funds, which, as I've mentioned, have grown to about a quarter of our budget from their inception in fiscal year 10. Now I want to talk a little bit further about pass-through dollars. In FY2021, we had just under $300 million passed through to other entities in the DNR's budget. That's about 20% of our total budget in the biennium passing through to other folks. And I've already talked about the general fund with treaty payments and PILT, but we also have a number of other funds that pass through to other entities, more than half of which come from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, $160 million in FY2021. That's that large orange piece, as well as the Parks and Trails legacy dollars that goes through to outstate parks. That's the yellow pie piece you see there, as well as LCCMR or Environmental Trust dollars that pass through, and then pass-through dollars also within grants in the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources Fund as well. Just to spend a moment on some of our major federal programs, we do receive a variety of federal funds, most notably are Pittman, Robertson, and Dinkle Johnson. What these are these are federal excise taxes on things like guns and ammunition and gas that are apportioned out to all states based on a variety of factors, including hunting and fishing licenses sold in each state. And by state and federal law, these funds are deposited into the Game and Fish Fund. Outside of Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson, we also have a variety of federal grants. In FY 20 and 21, these grants constituted about 5% of our total budget, or about $72.5 million. I just wanted to mention a few of the most notable grant programs. We do have the Coast Guard program that is administered by our Division of Enforcement. This is $3.7 million a year, and it goes throughout the state for a variety of boating safety programs. We also have the Coastal Zone program, which is about $1.6 million a year for the purposes of balancing economic development and natural resource protection within the coastal zone. And then we have the state wildlife grants, which are about $2 million a year in order to coordinate the implementation of the state's wildlife action plan. And then one final piece that I would mention is the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. This is actually a series of a variety of grants for the purposes of restoration of the Great Lakes Basin. These grants totaled about $10 million a year in FY21 and are anticipated to be about $17 million in FY22 and 23. And at this point, I'm going to pass it on to our commissioner, Bob Meyer, to go through some of our division budgets.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. This first slide, dealing with lands and minerals. Now you can see the lands and minerals budget. I'm sorry, my talking points are on a different slide. Lands and minerals budget is provides mine permitting and reclamation, mineral management, and real estate services for the state. It's our smallest division with a FY 2021 budget of $38.1 million. Right away, you can see the huge majority of lands and mineral budget is dedicated funding. The general fund budget is just $3.7 million per biennium, or about 12% of their total budget. These general funds primarily support minerals management activities such as reclamation, research, and evaluation to ensure that we are continuing to make science-based decisions related to mining permits. Lands and Minerals also receives funding from the Natural Resources Fund, primarily the Minerals Management Account, which supports the Minerals Resource Management Act and mining permitting and monitoring activity related to school trust fund lands. Most of the revenue deposited in the school trust fund comes from mining resources, and we want to make sure that those projects are permitted and are running effectively and efficiently. You can also see the special revenue fund is a significant portion of lands and minerals budget. About half of the special revenue is for land management activities such as real estate. The other half of the special revenue activity is related to mine lease revenues. The next slide focuses on ecological and water resources, which works in three main service categories: conservation assistance and regulation services, ecosystem management and protection services, inventory monitoring and analysis. Ecological water resources has one of our most segmented budgets, with a number of dedicated funding sources and programs working together to offer. As Mary discussed, the ecological water resources is a home of a number of federal programs and grants, including the Coastal Zone Program, State Wildlife Management Grants, and Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. In addition, Ecological Water Resources also is a home for our non-game programs. About 20% of the Ecological Water Resource budget is from constitutionally designated funds. We receive funding from Clean Water Legacy, Outdoor Heritage, and the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund dollars to support water protection and habitat conservation work. Ecological Water Resources General Fund dollars support AIS, or Aquatic Invasive Species, and water protection work. Water-related work is the one area where our fees cannot cover the costs of the programs. If we were to charge fees to cover the costs of the programs, permittees such as local units of government and others would not be able to afford those permits. So the $37 million in general fund budget for ecological water resources plays a key role in protecting the state's waters, along with our water management and aquatic invasive species accounts in the Natural Resources Fund. Game and Fish funds include the Game and Fish Fund operating account funds and heritage enhancement funds for the fish habitat in lakes, rivers, and streams. It also funds surveys, monitoring, and technical assistance to improve wetlands, forests, and prairie habitat. The other funds you see here refer primarily to our Reinvest in Minnesota programs and dollars in the remediation fund. Next slide, please, Mary. Does the Division of Forestry provide services of fire prevention and suppression, forest management, forest education, and technical assistance to communities and private landowners? Right away, you can see general fund. Sorry, I'm jumping around in my notes because these slides are a little bit out of order. General fund includes the open appropriation for fire suppression, which is about $32 million for the biennium. General fund is also one of the major sources of forest management funding. Forest management is paid for across the general fund, forest management investment account, and the heritage enhancement account in the Game and Fish Fund. The heritage enhancement account also pays for invasive species activities. The special revenue fund includes the operation of our state's forest nurseries, and we'll talk more about that later today as we get into specific budget initiatives, as well as cooperative agreements. The Division of Parks and Trails uses a number of different sources to manage a seamless outdoor recreation system. The General Fund, State Parks Account, and State Parks Lottery and Lieu Account and the Natural Resources Fund come together to fund our state park system. Parks and Trails also receives Parks and Trails legacy dollars, the yellow pie piece. It's important to remember that Parks and Trails legacy funds cannot be used for state park operations. Our trail system is supported by a number of dedicated accounts, including the motorized vehicle accounts of water recreation, snowmobile, ATV, off-road vehicle, and off-highway motorcycle. These accounts get their primary revenues from vehicle registrations and from gas tax receipts. The division also receives game and fish funds that support water access sites, which is also the primary focus of the water recreation account. The special revenue account contains revenues from sales, tours, and lodging, such as the Douglas Lodge revenue account. The Division of Fish and Wildlife is the largest source of funding, and the Game and Fish Fund is the largest source of funding for our Fish and Wildlife Division. A total of $169 million, or 62% of their FY 2021 budget. As discussed, federal Pittman-Robertson and Dingell Johnson dollars are deposited in the Game and Fish Fund for game and fish related purposes. The division also receives funding from the natural resources accounts, primarily related to vehicle registrations for motorized vehicles. In FY 2021, about 20% of the fish and wildlife budget came from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for habitat conservation, restoration, and enhancement activities. Fish and Wildlife also administers our licensing system, which administers 1.5 million licensed anglers, 550,000 licensed hunters, and 7,000 licensed trappers in the state of Minnesota. And I just want to give a shout out to these hardworking employees, because these folks made sure that everyone who wanted to get outside this past year and hunt or fish or recreate were able to do so legally and stay out of trouble. Next slide, please, Mary. The Division of Enforcement, as we have discussed, hold on one second here, sorry. Visitor Enforcement is funded by several dedicated funds, with the largest portion of its budget coming from the Game and Fish Fund. You can see the Game and Fish Fund operating account is the largest single source, and Enforcement also receives funding from the Peace Officer Training account within the Game and Fish Fund. Enforcement receives funding from seven accounts within the Natural Resources Fund, including the motorized vehicle accounts such as ATV and snowmobile, which are our Division of Enforcement uses for vehicle enforcement related activities, and also the state park accounts. General fund is about 13% of the division of enforcement's budget, and around 3% of that general fund is general fund base is restricted to the AIS related enforcement activities. The unrestricted portion of enforcement's general fund budget is the only source of funding that can be used for public safety deployments, as the DNR cannot use dedicated funding for these activities. Our Division of Operations Services, or Operations Support, includes our leadership, as well as services such as communications, human resources, legal, finance and budget, diversity, fleet, and building services. These activities are paid for through internal billings. Operations Support also includes administration of pass-through dollars from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Environmental Trust Funds, for which you can see the appropriations here. The only general fund appropriations that our operations support received in FY 2021 were for agency-wide legal costs. I will now turn the presentation back over to Commissioner Stroman to walk through our 22-23 governor recommendation proposals.
Commissioner Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to continue. I think all the committee members are aware, the governor has framed his budget around the COVID-19 recovery for the state of Minnesota. Obviously, during the COVID-19 pandemic, Minnesota's outdoors and natural resources played a really important role for Minnesotans to enjoy safe and healthy outdoor activities. And so this budget really recognizes that. And our budget is organized into four themes. To make sure that we can continue to connect people with the outdoors, mitigate climate change, proactively manage natural resources, and address our operational needs. So we'll walk through the major proposals in this budget by these themes. So that first theme is connecting people with the outdoors. And the first proposal we'll talk about is investing in watercraft recreation. In Minnesota, we know we have 2.5 million acres of rivers and lakes. And so those acres of water give Minnesotans really a first-class water recreation system. We have about 820,000 recreational watercraft registered in Minnesota. Those numbers were from 2020. The rising cost of maintaining and improving watercraft access sites, driven both by aging infrastructure and evolving user needs, as well as expectations, exceeds our current funding levels. Boaters, paddlers, lake associations, as well as local governments are increasingly asking and in some cases demanding better infrastructure to support the state's water-based tourism and recreational system. This proposal recommends an investment of $3.7 million from the water recreation account in fiscal years 22-23 through increased watercraft registration fees. These fees have not been raised since 2006. Also just note that the increases range from $1 for boats owned by nonprofits to $40.50 for a pleasure craft over 40 feet in length. And fees are paid once every 3 years. So if you do the math, the annual increase on that pleasure craft over 40 feet in length is $13.50. More than 70% of registered boat owners will pay less than a $4 annual increase. Among the needs that this $3.7 million investment from the water recreation account would address are the rehabilitation of existing public water accesses in collaboration with local government partners, enhancing the operation and maintenance of public water access sites and state water trails, such as adding docks or portable toilets to sites that don't currently have them, preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species by adding boat cleaning areas, and better serving Minnesotans with mobility challenges by upgrading facilities to meet current ADA design standards. The fee revenue would also address a $1 million structural deficit in the water recreation account. And I'll just emphasize that without this additional fee revenue that this proposal would generate, these critical improvements and maintenance issues won't be addressed at public water recreation sites. Next, we'll talk about the proposal to maintain our park and recreation area experiences. And as I know you've all heard me say many times, and will probably hear me say many times before session is done, and as all of you have seen for yourselves, Minnesotans are really embracing outdoor activities. And we've seen that in record numbers. And that's been to manage the stress and the anxiety and to find healing and solace in nature. This past year, our state parks, trails, and recreation areas played a really important role in providing access to these benefits to all Minnesotans. To help ensure that Minnesotans continue to receive many of the services they expect and have been enjoying at state parks and recreation areas, this proposal recommends a modest increase in state park vehicle permit fees. We're proposing to increase the annual permit by $10 from $35 to $45. That's the annual pass for one vehicle. And the daily permit fees would increase by $3. So that would go from $7 to $10. There would be lower increases for disability permits and second vehicles, as well as lower increases for nonprofits and resort owners. The proposed budget will allow an increased investment of $1.7 million over the biennium for state park and recreation area operations and make considerable progress toward addressing a long-standing structural imbalance that we have in the state park account. So as I said, this proposal addresses addresses challenges to our capacity to maintain the state's park and recreation area experience that Minnesotans deserve and desire. These current challenges include increases in visitation and operating costs that require additional resources to keep up the basic public services and security and meet those public expectations. During the pandemic, as I've mentioned, visitation increased 60% at state parks near Minnesota's most populated areas and nearly 25% statewide. So with increased visitation comes increased impact and a need for increased services at those parks. The fund balance is critically low, risking the ability to mitigate unforeseen revenue impacts due to natural disasters, emergency response, or weather-related effects on vegetation. For example, managing the effects of some of the climate and increased rain events also influences the cost of maintaining park experiences and can impact revenue as well. For example, redesigning campgrounds that experience regular flooding is something that we've had to do. At Nurse Strand Big Woods, much of the park's trail network had to be closed this spring due to standing water. Poor trail conditions due to excess precipitation throughout has significant visitor impacts to park trails as the trails became widened and difficult to pass. And then that affects the adjacent native plant community understory as people try to find a way around those muddy spots. So we had to install barriers and signage over long stretches of parks trails to minimize those visitor impacts to spring wildflowers. Unless these factors are addressed, Minnesotans will experience service reductions, including shortened camping seasons and fewer services offered during shoulder seasons, reduced winter services, less frequent bathroom cleaning and reduced availability of portable toilets, less maintenance of trails and parking lots, deferred sign maintenance, and less interpretive naturalist programming, resulting in fewer of the one-of-a-kind tours and activities, reduced opportunities to connect new people to the outdoors, and reduced opportunities for school groups. I'll move next to the theme of mitigating climate change. And this proposal is one to accelerate tree planting to capture carbon. We know that a mature tree can absorb about 48 pounds of carbon a year. So if we increase the number of trees in Minnesota by reestablishing forests on open land and improving tree cover on existing forested land, this is a common sense and cost-effective approach to offsetting greenhouse gas emissions. I know this has been a topic that the committee has discussed previously. This particular budget proposal in the governor's budget proposes $2.6 million in general fund investment to expand the tree growing capacity at the state forest nursery and to provide incentives on to establish trees on open land and increase tree density in existing forests. Specifically, the investment increases the capacity of the state forest nursery. It provides incentives to private landowners to replant trees on open lands and increase the density in existing forests. We've established an initial goal to plant an additional 12 million trees, which when full grown will achieve an additional 5 million tons of greenhouse gas emission offset by 2025. Right, I'm gonna move to the category of proactively managing our natural resources. And the first proposal in this category is advancing and modernizing DNR's forest inventory. We know that our forest lands are critical natural infrastructure to support recreation, habitat, and a sustainable economy, as well as to address carbon capture, as I just discussed. Our forest inventory system provides critical baseline data to inform management decisions on DNR managed forest lands. However, the current inventory approach relies heavily on ground surveys of forest cover. It's incredibly labor intensive and expensive. This budget proposal recommends a one-time investment of $1 million from the Natural Resources Fund to modernize our data collection approach to the inventory. By transitioning to new LiDAR technology, we will be able to collect more accurate data, more up-to-date data, and detailed data to give us a better picture of our forest inventory at a lower cost. The improved data will also enable DNR to complete advanced analyses of changes in forests over time. This will help us better predict carbon storage and climate change impacts, as well as refine management decisions. We can't make good management decisions if the data we have about what's in those forests is not up to date and accurate. The next proposal I want to talk about is ensuring the full use of critical habitat license plate contributions. As we know, Minnesota's critical habitats allow for endangered, rare, and important wildlife species to survive and thrive. The popularity of our critical habitat license plates in Minnesota, and these plates support protection of critical habitat, has grown immensely in recent years. We now receive approximately $5 million annually from those license plate contributions. Due to the popularity of the plates and the additional revenue that those plates generate, this budget proposal is to modernize the Reinvest in Minnesota program to accelerate those investments in critical habitat for fish, wildlife, rare resources, and native plants. The issue is that the contributions from the critical habitat plates are only available for these intended uses of habitat conservation when equally matched by a separate private donation, and it has to be a one-for-one match. The qualifying private donations historically have been at about $3 million annually. So we're taking in $5 million in plate contributions, only $3 million in qualifying private donations, leaving a balance of about $2 million in critical habitat license plate contributions per year unmatched that we cannot use. So this proposal provides new options for ensuring that all of the critical habitat license plates can be invested. Specifically, we are proposing to change that equal one-to-one matching requirement to two-to-one, such that two license plate dollars for every dollar in additional private donation can be spent, allowing a complete match of all non-game donations, using critical habitat investments from bonding dollars to match license plate dollars, and finally, we are proposing to ensure adaptive management by funding restoration and enhancement of lands that provide critical habitat, as well as the monitoring needed to make sure that we are managing appropriately and managing adaptively to maintain that critical habitat over time. We estimate that these changes will increase our investment in Minnesota's critical habitat conservation by approximately $7 million per year for the next 4 years, and by $2 million annually after that. Next, I'm going to talk about our operational needs. And the first one I will talk about is the public safety proposal. This is a proposal that has been revised in the governor's supplemental or revised COVID-19 recovery budget. And I think as we've discussed with this committee before, during 2020 and 2021, DNR conservation officers have been called to address both peaceful demonstrations as well as civil unrest in Minneapolis, in St. Paul. They've been at the Capitol. complex and across Minnesota. And this has been sort of an unprecedented level of involvement from our conservation officers. This budget proposal recommends providing $3.3 million to resolve the fiscal year 21 deficiency in the DNR Enforcement's division's budget due to the recent deployments as well as expected deployments. And then $2.2 million in fiscal year 22 for other anticipated deployments. I will just note the reason this is so important is because we cannot use dedicated sources of funding. And I want to be really clear because I think there are some folks out in the public who are under the impression that we are using license dollars for this work. We are not using license dollars for this work. We can only use general fund to pay for these public safety costs. And so receiving the special appropriation is really critical for us to fill that hole in our enforcement division budget and continue to do the rest of the really important natural resources work that they do and that we do across the department. The next proposal is related to legal costs. And this is something I know we've discussed in previous years with the committee. You're all aware that both the DNR and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency make a variety of natural resource, environmental, regulatory permit, leasing and other types of decisions. And sometimes these decisions are challenged in federal or state court through contested case hearings, through mediation or other venues. Defending agency actions and going through the court process is an expensive undertaking. It is well within Minnesotans' rights to avail themselves of that option, but it does put a burden on agency budgets. So to adequately defend natural resources and environmental regulatory permit and leasing decisions, the governor has recommended an appropriation of $4 million in fiscal year 22 from the general fund to support the legal costs associated with contested decisions by DNR and MPCA. So similar to what we've done in the past, the full appropriation comes to DNR and then half of it is for DNR, half of it is passed to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mayor, if you can go to the next slide, I want to talk about another really important proposal that is actually part of the revised budget related to protecting digital assets from cyber attack. As Assistant Commissioner Meyer noted, we had a lot of folks wanting to access license opportunities and other services through the pandemic, and many of them relied on an increased amount of online activity. It's really important then that we keep pace with our IT modernization and security needs to keep agency applications safe from cyber attack and to protect customer data. This proposal here for DNR is part of a larger statewide strategy to make Minnesota's digital infrastructure more resilient and more secure. Every day we see a horror story of some entity that has a cybersecurity crisis and has lost information. And so I think it's really important that we secure ours. This particular proposal provides $1.1 million annually ongoing to establish an IT security and modernization program. Specifically, it will begin migration of DNR's digital assets to the cloud to ensure their security. And then I want to just briefly also mention the operating adjustment that the governor has proposed for Minnesota DNR. Operational and costs increase annually, especially for compensation and information technology, as we just discussed. While we're always looking for ways to become more efficient with existing resources, these efficiency efforts can't completely offset cost increases. So this proposal has two parts. It includes a reduction of $2 million in fiscal year 21, and then an operating adjustment of $4 million in fiscal years 22 and 23. That fiscal year 21 operating adjustment reduction reflects savings generated by the state hiring freeze. And I will note that while the state hiring freeze generated savings, it also lessened our services to the public. So for example, seasonal staffing levels were reduced across the state park system by 30 to 50%, impacting visitor services, delaying trail maintenance. Our AIS inspectors were late getting out. And so that delayed the work that they were able to do early in the season. So that's why the savings is reflected as a one-year proposal only. We are not anticipating to continue those service reductions going forward. But looking forward, we will continue to look at ways to be more efficient throughout fiscal years 22 and 23. Some of the ways that we're doing that are completing the implementation of a service delivery model redesign in the DNR's business office throughout the state. We're examining opportunities to use a portion of COVID-related increase in telework post-pandemic, which will allow for additional efficiencies in office space. And we're deploying new technology tools, including electronic document management, new communication platforms, and work efficiency applications. So we will continue to explore and use these efficiencies, but I will emphasize that even with these efficiencies, cost growth continues to put pressure on budgets, and without additional resources, our service delivery will erode. So this proposed operating adjustment in the second in 22-23 of $4 million is just 0.3% of DNR's total budget across all funds and addresses just a portion of the anticipated inflation over the next biennium. There are a few smaller budget items that we'd just like to make sure you're aware of. And so I'm gonna ask Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer to run through those items.
Commissioner Meyer. Meyer.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I was on mute. As with other triennial budgets, the department has a number of smaller pieces within the budget that we would like to see passed in order to increase our work efficiency and pass through dollars more effectively. The first, dealing with a state land and water conservation account appropriation. This is needed to increase due to the increase of the LAWCON funds at the national level. 50% of the money appropriated to the state from these funds must be used for state land acquisition and development for the state outdoor recreation system, and the other 50% of the land and water conservation funds must be granted out to local communities. This appropriation is needed for us to continue on with that work. We're also looking to provide open access for tribal members on state park lands. This proposal clarifies, simplifies, and expands existing departmental policy around tribal members visiting state parks and recreation areas, providing members of Minnesota tribal nations with state park vehicle permits free of charge will make existing policies more inclusive for tribal members as well as for DNR to administer. Authorization of state park permit violation fee. This tool is needed to increase the likelihood that visitors will purchase permits required to enter these park day use areas that are required with permits. Right now, what we'd like to do is clarify in statute who would be able to receive that ticket. It would be the vehicle owner, which is a loophole that we need to clarify. Additionally, we'd like to clarify allowable uses for state park reservation fees. This is an issue we discussed last year towards the end of session. We're seeking statutory clarification that revenue from state park reservation fees is available for costs associated with camping and lodging operations, such as revenue and retail system management and fiscal controls, not solely for the cost of the reservation delivery system. Additionally, lottery in lieu cost recovery for grant administration would allow us to receive up to 2.5% of the lottery in lieu appropriation for administrative costs, which we are not able to capture at this point in time. We have investment in state forest campgrounds. We discussed this with the Permanent School Fund Commission yesterday. The DNR operates 26 state forest campgrounds located on school trust fund lands, and currently all camping fee revenues from these campgrounds are directly deposited into the permanent school fund. This causes the DNR to rely on other funds for the maintenance and operations of these campgrounds. What we're seeking is the authority to capture 80% of the camping fees from the state forest campgrounds located on school trust lands to support the maintenance and operations, and also additional investment into these campgrounds to increase the revenue. It would be approximately $180,000 to $200,000 a year based upon use. It's really won't cover all of the costs of our operating costs, but it will allow us to continue to put money into the trust while getting some revenue for the operation and look for increased uses. Several areas where we'd like to increase some permitting on our outdoor activities. We've been in discussions with youth tournament organizers, and most of these organizers feel that it would be a good idea to support, or they do support our fishing tournaments and permitting for youth tournaments. Currently, they're not permitted, but by allowing these to be permitted, it will provide efficiencies as far as scheduling, posting and notification of where these tournaments are on our website. So fishermen and women can know where the tournaments are and maybe go to a different lake that's not as crowded that day. We'd also like to require permits for bow fishing tournaments. This would allow us to not only place them on a calendar, but provide conditions on the types of fish that can be used. And we are concerned that some of our native fish are being taken during these tournaments, and we would like to reduce that take. We're also seeking to clarify authority for existing permits and licenses. There are several licenses that were established by the legislature at the DNR's request that we inadvertently forgot to authorize the ELS fee, some firearm safety fees, and ELS fees and Game and Fish Fund fee activities would be supported by those changes. We'd like to simplify the aquatic invasive species surcharge that was passed last biennial budget, and thank you for your support on that. As you know, it was raised from $5 to $10.60 during the conference committee process. That change, that 60 cents or returning 40 cents to those purchasers is problematic, not only for the DNR, but for our deputy registrars as yours as well. We'd like to roll it up to $11. It generated about $109,000 a year that would be put into the account, which would help deal with a small structural imbalance. We have last year's and this year's lands bills that are sitting out there that do have a small fiscal impact as well. And thank you for working on those with us and getting those to where they are. We appreciate your support. There's several new items that have come in that we haven't been able to talk about within our budget in the governor's revised budget that came out last week. The first is $1 million to help support our chronic wasting disease activities, which would cover the Adopt a Dumpster program and also our monitoring and surveillance activities for the coming year. It won't cover the cost completely, but it will help reduce the amount that the deer hunters are paying to manage chronic wasting disease. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, there's a $3 million pass-through grant to the Red Lake Nation for aquatic invasive species response. Mr. Chair, that is our budget presentation. We would be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Let me just get the hands up here. And we have Representative Heinzman. And I want to make sure we go on every other one here so that we've got balance within the parties. So Representative Heinzman, and then Representative Eklund, and then Representative Green. So. Representative Heinzman.
Mr. Chair, before I launch into my questions, we started 15 minutes late. You might have already mentioned how long we plan on going, but what's the clock look like?
2:45.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we do have some time. That's good. I'll just start with kind of where the presentation ended and work my way back. Commissioner Meyer, you were talking about youth fishing tournaments and wanting to make sure that they are permitted, and I'm not sure how this would be handled or fit into what you're working towards with this change, but you know, I have a lot of groups, and I do mean I'm specifically referring to younger groups that are organized every week around the lakes area that I represent, high school tournament kids for the most part that they pull in from kids all over the area, and they might call it Tuesday night bassin or whatever it might be, right? How would this affect them? Because it's a very low-key thing, but they are definitely holding little competitions amongst themselves, and it might be, you know, between 20 and 30 boats.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heinzman, thank you for the question. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The permit conditions would be for tournaments over 25 boats or more, which currently is what exists in law. So many of these neighborhood, work, whatever they might be, tournaments are just fishing leagues, I think is kind of what a lot of them are. do not need to be permitted. What we're trying to get at are these larger tournaments that are growing in huge popularity. Many of them are held, it's a catch photo release type of opportunity, or they have them in a virtual atmosphere, so you can fish, everybody's fishing different lakes in a region or statewide. So we do not, our goal is not to get at those types of events at all. It's to coordinate the larger tournament, student tournament organized events, making sure that we're reducing conflict and also spreading out the pressure on lakes throughout the year. So,
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a concern there. I hope that we're not going to create a hardship for some of these young people that are just out having a great time. And, you know, I know there's probably many hundreds of these young people around the state, especially with the popularity of the high school fishing programs and so on and so forth. So that's one concern that I have in the changes. You know, as I was listening to some of the discussion from Commissioner Stroman about park fee increases, I had heard some things that I just would like to get her take on. I think she said increased visitation in Minnesota parks means increased impacts. I get that. That makes sense. And of course, last year we saw huge increases, but we also saw decreases in the folks actually at the gates collecting fees. And I'm wanting to get a better idea if we've been able to identify what the potential impact of that might have been. Since there was no one at the gate collecting the fee, the increase that would have potentially been there was gone. So I'm assuming the commissioner is aware of that, and if she is, maybe she has an idea how much of an impact that might have had. So the justification for the fee increase, I just want to better understand where that's coming from.
Commissioner Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Heintzman. It's a great question, because the funding is, as I think you probably saw a glimpse of, for our state park system is a little bit complicated, right? So I think, first of all, there's the increase, right, in visitorship, and that means there's more activity for our folks to do. The issue with the permit revenue, actually, I mean, I think our team did a really good job of getting out in front and encouraging people to get those permits online before they got to the parks. And so there was a lot of public awareness about being able to get your permit online. We also have been in some parks starting to pilot self-service kiosks, so you can get your permit when there is not somebody staffed there. And then later in the season, we did have folks staffed. So I don't know that we can provide a specific number on what we might have lost, but the actual impact of the increased visitorship was an increase in revenue from those park permit sales, because we sold more of them. So I can't tell you how many might have been from people going into the parks without paying, but we did sell more of them this year. That revenue increase is also then impacted when you look at the total parks by the decrease we had in camping revenue, because our campgrounds were closed for much of the season. The decrease we had in rental revenue because we were unable to rent out facilities for events during the pandemic. So you kind of have to look at all of those and how it balances out. So even if we expect, though, increased visitation and increased permit sales, that is not sufficient to, one, eliminate the increase in costs from, you know, inflation, labor costs, IT costs, and the impact of more visitors, which means more maintenance in the park. And it's not enough to overcome the structural deficit that we already have in the account. And so that's why, frankly, even if you take the pandemic out of the equation, we would be here with the need for a fee increase in the park permit because of that structural deficit. We need to reach the account.
Representative Heintzman, one more, and then we've got to get some others in. So,
yeah, another drill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I guess I find it a little bit ironic, Commissioner, because I see that in other parts of your proposal today, we see, like, for example, a discussion around walk-ins. Your estimate is that we could have as high as 30% of the folks accessing the park as a walk-in not paying. So I see that you've found a way to produce some kind of an estimate as to how many aren't paying. if they walk in. But when we have positions that aren't staffed over the course of the last year, we have no idea what might have been lost in terms of revenue. So that kind of creates a question mark there. And on that question that I brought up just now, as it relates to walk-ins, looking at that number, what do you believe is the lost revenues in that case? And then also, how are they doing that? You know, I visit Cuyuna frequently, and I know a lot of people will bike into the park. Is that what you're referring to?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heinzman, so the 30% number that you're referring to was a bit of research that our Parks and Trails Division did by actually sitting out at one of the parks and counting not only walk-ins, but drive-ins, right? People who came into the park, they didn't have a sticker when they arrived, and so they needed to purchase one, and watching them to see if they did take care of that or not. And so, you know, that's the best estimate we have based on some real research and some data, but I will emphasize, right, it's not a representative sample of our parks. It was pre-COVID. And so that's where I say specifically, we can't give you a number because we weren't at all of the parks during the pandemic to understand what that number is. That's a ballpark we can estimate. It's frankly also one of the reasons why we have the proposal that Assistant Commissioner Meyer talked about who is responsible and clarifying when we have someone who doesn't pay and there's a vehicle that does not have a permit sticker, who do we find to pay that fee? Is it someone who borrowed the vehicle and is in the park, or is it the vehicle owner? And so that's part of that proposal, to make sure that we can go back to the vehicle owner and recoup those fees.
Representative Heinzman, I'd like to go to the next question and then maybe cycle back to you if that's okay.
That would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Commissioner Stroman, and your staff for the presentation. I got three questions. First one is the DNR eligible for any federal COVID-related expenses? I'm thinking especially around mining and or forestry, and I'll follow up with my reasoning for asking that.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, so I will answer both going back. There was some federal funding we received from prior COVID relief funds, and our CFO, Mary Robinson, could talk about that. I think going forward in terms of the funding that is available, we're still trying to find all of the information regarding eligibility requirements. So we know there will probably be items within the DNR that will qualify, but at this point, until we have all the information on eligibility, it's a little bit too early to speculate on what specific pieces might fall into that. And I just ask Ms. Robinson, if I missed anything critical in that answer, you can let me know or let the committee know.
Ms. Robinson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the commissioner addressed it. At this point, there are many unknowns, so we'll keep folks posted as we learn more about eligibility.
Representative Eklund, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, the reason I ask that is because I have a bill in that would provide relief to loggers, and it's directly related to the Verso paper mill shutting down, which is at least partially COVID-related for their shutdown. So I'd really like you, your staff to dig into that quickly and see if we can do something that could provide some relief for this bill as it's going forward. Thank you on that. The second question I have is the money that we appropriated to the chronic wasting disease, where did it go? It seems like it just kind of disappeared. So if I could get some feedback on what has been done and what we're doing moving forward.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, I'm going to let Commissioner Meyer answer that question since he oversees our Division of Fish and Wildlife. He will have a more specific answer than I can give you at this point.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for that. Representative Eklund, if you do not see our quarterly reports that we submit to the legislator, to the committees, we can certainly get that for you. I have the next quarterly report sitting here in my inbox right now, we received 1.87 million general fund last biennium, 1.595 FY20, and then 275 in 21. Our actual costs for our CWD program in FY20 were 2.77 million, and last year 1.95 million. Since we did not do mandatory monitoring, you did not need to drop your deer off; it was voluntary. So all of our costs are on an annual basis, roughly $2.7 million a year, and we received some general fund, but these activities are subsidized heavily by deer hunters throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund. Yep.
I'll certainly take a look at that report, and it just seems like, especially without any voluntary drop off and that, and no staffing there, it just seems like maybe we need to take a look at tightening up the program. The third question I have is about the park fee increases. Is there any consideration, Commissioner, from the DNR or others to ask for a general fund match for any of these park fee increases? Because I know some of our metro parks and others are going to the general fund looking for matches. So I just wanted to ask about that. I have, most people don't know, maybe most of them do, but I probably have more state parks in my district than anybody else. And I know that they are falling behind on a lot of the maintenance and other duties and obligations that need to be taken care of at the park. So I'm just curious if the DNR in putting together a budget has looked at something like this.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, that's a great question. Right now for this year, our proposal is focused on that state park permit fee, partly because we need to bring that account into structural balance. But you know, as you noted, our state parks are supported both by those fees, that clearly doesn't cover all of it, and general fund. So you know, that's sort of the model that Minnesota has chosen to this point, to use both of those funding sources as well as legacy funds and other sources to fund our state parks. You know, obviously it's for the legislature and the governor through the budgeting process ultimately to agree on how that balance shakes out in the end.
We have to move on to Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a number of questions too, but I'll try to get through just a few of them, and then hopefully if there's time, we can come back. But to Commissioner Stroman, or maybe Deputy Commissioner Myers, whoever is willing or ready to answer it, I see that there's a grant in here for Red Lake for $3 million. And I know that every year we give $10 million to all 87 counties in Minnesota to fight AIS. And so, you know, you're looking at a 33% of that just to Red Lake. So the first question is there a problem that has been recognized on Red Lake that would warrant that much money just to one area?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, the issue there is it's been a couple of years now that zebra mussels have been discovered in Red Lake. Red Lake Nation has been very concerned about that. Obviously, you know, we work in partnership with them and the county to do AIS monitoring and prevention work there. I think that the level of work that we are able to do there with the amount of funding to DNR and the amount of work to the county has not been sufficient in the eyes of Red Lake Nation. And so, you know, they made a specific request for some funding direct to their tribal government so they could initiate a program and be more robustly funded. So that's what that funding is.
Joe Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hate to do this, but I'm gonna throw a jab in at you because I'm trying for years to try to get before the AIS came in. You know, we know how it came in, and now we're told that it's transferred to lakes mostly by fishermen who carry their boats from lake to lake. I believe Red Lake, for at least the most part, is closed, and so I'd like to see that. It's not that I'm denying it. I want to know on the AIS. I want to know how it got there and what we're going to do. And also with the DNR, they pretty much from the start gave up on trying to eradicate AIS, because I remember in this committee listening to the DNR tell me that they're just going to manage it until the lakes can adapt to it. So I have a little animosity there because I'm concerned about that AIS. But the other thing is on the, you know, you're proposing to up the fees for parks at a daily rate of 40% and an annual rate of 30%. And if you don't, you've suggested that you're going to have to reduce what you're doing in the parks. Now we have 75 parks and recreation areas, and this has been brought up most years as well, that a lot of these parks and recreation areas aren't utilized very much. So is instead of raising the fees by this much, and from your own testimony here today, it seems like this could be temporary, the lack of funding that you've got right now, if people are back in, is there any talk about reducing some of the expenses by cutting back on some of the areas that people are not visiting?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, that essentially is already how we manage the state park and recreation area system. We manage it via, in accordance to a system plan that we have created for the parks, which puts park and recreation areas into categories, and then they are managed according to that. So the core destination parks, we have destination parks, we have core parks, we have rustic parks. And so the idea is that we put the most services and investment in those parks that have higher visitorship, are those destination parks. You know, the next level is in the core, the least is in the rustic. And so there's sort of a public expectation that if you visit a rustic park, you will not find the same level of amenities, you will not find the same level of service as you do in other parks. So that is one of the efficiencies that we have implemented. The reality is, you know, all of our parks now, while they're seeing differing levels, many of them that had not received, high visitation received more over the last year. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we can maintain a consistent level of service in across all of the parks according to the system plan and the level at which they are slated to be managed.
John Green.
Mr. Chair, one more question for now. In the past, we have received a list of the parks that made money and a list of the parks that lost money, parks, recreation areas. And the last one I got, I believe that only 21 out of the 75 were actually supporting themselves. The rest were really a drain on the others. Do you still have that information, and can we get that report?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, I'm assuming we can provide that information. And we obviously don't have it today, but we can provide that. I would also just add, you know, we don't run our parks as revenue generating enterprises. There may be elements that do, but, you know, the parks are a public amenity that is available to all Minnesotans. So that's part of the reason we support them. We want to support the whole system, but we can, I believe, and can get back to you with the list of the revenue generated by park.
Commissioner, if you can get that to us, we'll get it out to the whole committee. I'm going to go with Representative Becker Finn, then Representative Lewick, then Representative Lippert, then Representative Igo, and we've got about 20 minutes left. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to note for the record that about 50,000 acres of Upper Red Lake are open for fishing to non-tribal members, just so folks are aware that that is the case. And I don't think the zebra mussels know exactly where that boundary is between the tribal boundary and the non-tribal boundary. And I was also going to ask about the CWD dollars, because a lot of us on this committee fought really hard for those dollars in the last couple of years to be monitoring chronic wasting disease. And I know, we really did not, we didn't have the staff out there. It was purely voluntary. And I know the volume of testing that occurred was much lower than has been in the past, or even what we were hoping to have this year. And so I think in addition, I don't think it's that I'm necessarily insinuating that something bad happened, but if all those dollars did go to chronic wasting disease testing and monitoring. Does that mean if we had had a normal year, we would have been running in a deficit to keep up with all of that testing and monitoring? Because it's clearly the volume was not, especially in the endemic area in the southern part of the state, was not what it normally is. And I don't know if Commissioner Meyer has a response to that or if it's just some additional information they could get to us, but I guess I'll let him respond if he'd like.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Finn, thank you. We would have spent probably from 1.9 to, it would have been about 2.6, 2.7 million. The salary costs this past year from July 1st to December 31st of 2020, actually from July 2019 through December 31st, 2020, we've spent 1.6 million on just staff costs of collecting samples. And we've also spent almost 400,000 on sampling. It also covers our USDA culling contracts, travel costs, supplies. The cost of the dumpsters are included in that program as that was part of the general fund. Contracts for CWD tissue sampling, survey, working with taxidermists and processors, equipment. The costs for the entire program. So we anticipate that cost to be higher again next year because we will be going to mandatory surveillance most likely if the disease response allows us to. But again, it's salary for our staff traveling around, and we did have staff traveling around socially distanced, collecting deer heads, working with people, communicating with groups, working with processors, and our testing costs. So it's a matter of how much does a general fund pay or the deer hunters pay versus the general fund. As you know, we see most of these areas, there's a high density of deer farms close by or a location of a deer farm possibly. So is it right for the deer hunters to pay these whole costs? We don't think so, but obviously the legislature needs to support that position as well. And we would like to thank you for your work this session on CWD issues as well. So thank you very much.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, part of my point is that we're not anywhere near being done with that wildlife epidemic with chronic wasting disease. We might all be sick of talking about it, but it is still something we definitely are still going to have to deal with. And I guess that your answer just highlights how expensive it is for us to continue, in the environment and natural resources budget, in the game and fish fund from our deer hunters, to pay for this in so many areas of the state. My final question, Mr. Chair, will be, so just sort of fully wondering if how much the DNR has put into fully investigating any possible federal funds that could be used. I know there are a lot of different buckets of money in the multiple bills that have been passed at the federal level. And just wondering if some of the, especially the one-time costs, how closely are we monitoring the ability to tap into those funds for things like capital projects and cybersecurity, anything pandemic related or some of the facilities upgrade costs?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Finn, well, as I said earlier, we're monitoring all of those opportunities and looking for matches. As we sit right now, there's still a lot of eligibility criteria we don't yet know. So we will continue to keep this committee in the loop as we know more and can explore more of those ideas or those opportunities.
We would, just if I can interject here, and maybe Representative Heintzman can nod if he's in agreement, but we would certainly like the legislature to be involved as a partner in seeing where we can achieve some of those federal dollars, because clearly there are COVID costs that the agency had, and when the money is coming in, I think we have some ideas of how to make that happen, and we'd certainly prefer to be a partner in doing that. We'll go to Representative Lewick and then Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Stroman and Assistant Commissioner Meyer. Just want to again reiterate our thanks from up in our area for the work that the conservation officers are doing with public safety, our deputy sheriffs, Fond du Lac police force, just trying to keep the peace up there as we are well over halfway in completing that Enbridge pipeline. My question revolves around the proposal to sweep 80% of the fees coming off the school trust land campgrounds. Currently, as I understand, all of them are going into the school trust fund now. This looks like a little nibble at a huge, huge problem because, and I've got some real difficulty with this proposal because it doesn't really identify the big picture here. We've got well over 200 public accesses on to our lakes and streams that are on school trust land. Yet we're, as far as I know, we're not sweeping a nickel of the revenue that we collect relative to boats and that type of stuff, fishing license, all the other things that we use to fund that area. So I would ask that we kind of back off on that proposal and look at this on a more global basis because we continue to try to straighten out the complicated mess we find ourselves in with uses of school trust land that completely escaped the Minnesota Constitution and the requirement that we produce revenue from those lands. So I would ask that you consider pulling that back and let's sit down and look at this on a much more global basis with some huge, I mean, I believe, and this is a very dated estimate, I believe that the value of the real estate on those public accesses, and this is 5-6 year old estimate, it exceeds $80 million of school trust fund land that we're using for public accesses with zero reimbursement. So I would be very cautious about nibbling at this because there's a huge 900 pound gorilla sitting in a room about, you know, really recognizing that we've got big issues yet on how we're dealing with the use of school trust funds. So that's all I've got, but again, appreciate the hard work on keeping the peace up in our part of Minnesota. Thank you.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair, if I may address that really quickly.
Commissioner Meyer.
Representative Lewick, we completely understand your concerns and we're working through the compensation on the water access sites. As you know, statute directed us about 4 years ago to sell some lands and use those dollars to compensate the trust for those sites. We're going through that and we'll brief the commission on that shortly. As far as the state forest campgrounds, this is an area where we're subsidizing the trust since all the revenue are going into the corpus and it's taking about $200,000 a year to operate those campgrounds. And as we talked about, Commissioner Stroman talked about, we don't have enough money to operate the parks that we have. So we need to have a realistic conversation. And we would like to do that with the commission about how do we operate these types of campgrounds. And it is farther than the campgrounds. It's all of the DNR subsidization. It's where it's not being subsidized. How do we compensate? And we're working on those tools in the toolkit. We need to figure out how to fund those tools. So Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity just to address Representative Lewis' concern, and we look forward to working with your committee and the Permanent School Fund Commission and the Office of School Trust Lands on this important issue.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Stroman. I know that upgrading the facilities at the nursery in Badura is key to meeting the goal of planting 12 million trees by 2025. Wondering if you could just say more about the need and also how that fits into your general fund request as well.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert, thank you for that question. So yeah, the proposal, as I said earlier, there's two pieces to it. So the first one is to increase the capacity at the nursery. So that's, we have the space, we have the land, but we need to prepare the additional beds for the trees will have additional labor costs. There will be irrigation costs. those kinds of things. So it's that investment in the infrastructure as well as the labor to enhance that capacity and make sure that those trees get, you know, planted from seeds, that they get raised and then ultimately harvested and those seedlings made available. So that's kind of, I hope I'm answering your question. That's the a piece of the general fund investment proposal. And then, so that kind of happens first. And then once those seedlings are available, then the rest of the proposal is around the incentives to private landowners to enhance tree planting.
Commissioner Stroman, perhaps the question is, what is a capital expense and what is a general expense? You know, what goes into Representative Lee's Capital Investment Committee and what stays within this committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert, right now the whole proposal is proposed to be a general fund investment.
Representative Igo, keep getting more hands coming up. So Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And normally I'd turn my camera on, but since this picture I've got was taken in the Boundary Waters and I'm about to ask a question about it, I thought I'd leave it up. So the question I have is, in the governor's revised budget, I see a request for $500,000 for the BWCA land exchange. And I know through prior experience that the Fed still has $21 million set aside for it. So what are the deadlines here and what is this appropriation going to be used for?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
I think, Assistant Commissioner Meyer is prepared to address that one.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And just for the record, for the committee members, I work closely with the Office of School Trust Lands as our school trust coordinator. So that's why, if you are not aware of that, that's why I'm deferring these questions. I'm taking these questions here. And Representative Igo, thank you very much. These costs would cover the state's costs for the exchange. And actually, it's more than $500,000. It's $500,000 for 2 years, and then it's an ongoing, it's a four-year appropriation. As we get these lands and we start to process them, it's basically for the title work and things of that nature that need to occur, appraisals, staff time, legal time, to get the Boundary Waters lands that get the exchange done, right? Get the school trust fund lands out of the BWCA into the federal hands, and our land asset outside of the BWCA. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Fisher and then Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question has to do with the information that you collect on data on analyzing and delivering water data, especially groundwater data. I know that there was a study that came out that was saying that we need to improve access to existing data on aquifer properties, and was wondering, how does the public access your water data, especially the groundwater data right now?
Who wants to take that one? Meyer?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to need to work with you and follow up on that question. I'm not sure what data you're looking for. We have a lot of stream gauge data and groundwater data available on our website. And as you know, we continually monitor for sources of contaminant and we monitor fish. So are you looking for specific aquifer information, perhaps?
Yes, thank you. That's
right. Fisher.
Thank you for clarifying. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Meyer. Yes, the aquifer properties data, you know, the data that you folks collect on from groundwater, from different tests, et cetera, that are done out there. How easy is it for the public to access that data and be able to see that information that as it's been collected?
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner Meyer,
Representative Fisher, we try to make transparency and ease of access a high priority for us. I would assume by Googling groundwater or groundwater atlas information off of our website on the search bar, you could get really close, but I will provide the link to the committee on where that information is located as well.
Representative Nathan Nelson.
Let's see. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you hear me okay? Yeah, it looks like you can. Kind of looking at the, the state park fees and things like that. And, there's been some talk about the kiosks and, you know, allow it, you know, with people coming in. Also, I live right by St. Croix State Park. It's right across the Highway 48 from me. But, you know, a lot of the workers there, you know, a year ago, they were, you know, just the uncertainty of when and how they were coming back. And you know, kind of thinking of the rollout this upcoming season, what is the plan for getting people back to work? And, you know, as many of these, you know, they're seasonal and they've got, you know, many of them worked other jobs, you know, safely. And so what, you know, how is the DNR handling that? And, you know, what is the kind of the plan for getting back to somewhat normal for this upcoming year?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, thank you for that question. What I can say is, you know, obviously there's still many unknowns in the pandemic and therefore, you know, the state's response continues to evolve. I think the biggest difference from where we are this year from last year is in the timing of that, right? So we the pandemic kind of set on just as we would have been opening up parks. And so we didn't have protocols developed. We didn't know, you know, what was really going to happen next. This year, we're in a much different situation because, so we had to recall many of the seasonal workers, you know, very late in the process. Campgrounds, for example, weren't open till later in the season. We didn't want to recall staff that were integral to those campgrounds and then not have the work to do because the campgrounds were closed. This year, again, we anticipate being in a very different situation. So we are in the process of recalling seasonal staff. We do anticipate, you know, that we will be up and running as we were through, you know, the parks were up and running through most of this, or through all of the season, the campgrounds through part of the season. We're still working through exactly which services might look different for people, but we will not be in the same situation we were last year because we're a year into the pandemic and we've developed those protocols.
We're going to need to do the lightning round here. So Representative Jordan, Representative Heintzman, Representative Morrison, if you can just ask your question and then if the DNR can write them down and answer in the 3 minutes remaining. So Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is just generally also around park fees and making sure that, you know, our public lands are truly available to all members of the public. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about how some of these budget changes reflect the DNR's mission to provide outdoor recreation opportunities for people who are traditionally underserved or might be some of our more low-income Minnesotans.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a quick question for the commissioners and then a comment and question for you, Mr. Chair. I am hearing that we are reallocating how we are funding or what species of fish we're funding for stocking. And as most folks know, as many as 60% of Minnesotans are targeting, at least anglers are targeting walleye, and approximately 3% are targeting trout, if I have my information correct. If I don't, I apologize, but that's what I'm hearing. Are we now directing funds in a 50-50 split between those two species? That would be my question. And then, Mr. Chair, as we're coming to the end of the hearing today, I just want to quickly ask if maybe you could give us a ballpark idea of what we're looking at in terms of the path forward. We have our final deadline coming up this Thursday, and you know, the public is obviously watching the committee and wanting to know, same as I am, kind of what the DE release might be coming, when that might be coming, as well as the path, as I mentioned. So if those questions could be answered, that'd be great.
Representative Morrison could get her question in, and then if the DNR could follow up with individually after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Stroman and Assistant Commissioner Meyer and all from DNR for everything you do. I believe the proposal called for more funds for litigation to defend some of the permits DNR has issued. And I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit to that, and how does DNR avoid the perception of kind of looking like it's defending multinational corporations on the Minnesota taxpayer dime?
So those are three good questions I think people can respond to the question of the path forward. This morning we got our target, which is the same as the governor's target. The questions that you heard, I think, reflect the uncertainty of how federal dollars could be used in this budget area. We would like, and I would invite you, Representative Heinzman, to work with us and with the agencies on how we can capture some of those funds, because they would then have an impact on the overall budget. So if we can, and I think the commissioner said that that was fluid. So there's still a bit of uncertainty in terms of how the federal dollars come into this. We will hear on Thursday. We do not have Friday scheduled for a meeting, but we it's fluid in terms of how we're going to work on the DE. I'm looking for some additional guidance, but I would like to work with everyone here to get this completed. And with that, I see our time is up, and I don't want to get into trouble with the timekeeper, so we are adjourned.